dismissing the matter on the grounds of forum nonconvenience. The test for forum nonconvenience is met only in the most unusual and extreme cases, and this is not one of those cases. A defendant must show overwhelming hardship and inconvenience with particularity to obtain dismissal under forum nonconvenience, and the applicable factors the court applies in determining whether there's overwhelming hardship and inconvenience here require the rejection of the forum nonconvenience motion. I'd just like to run through the factors. I think I really am at a loss as to how we got to this point. Frankly, the forum nonconvenience motion argument was sort of a tail end of the briefing, and it wasn't the primary argument. The vast majority of the briefing below was on the main motion. The vast majority of the oral argument focused on the main, the 12B6 motion. And so, frankly, is my fault. We didn't, I guess, treat this seriously enough, and then this decision comes out, and there's a lot of factors that were addressed in the decision that really weren't fully addressed in the briefing. So I'd like to, or we didn't feel that we're vetted fully with the trial court. So if I could just go through the factors. The big factor the trial court seems to have focused on was the applicable law. First of all, the decisions of this court have uniformly held that the applicable law is generally a minor non-controlling factor in a forum non-convenience analysis. Obviously, the courts of this state routinely apply the laws of other states. Now, this case arises out of a freeze-out merger of a Florida company. There's no question about that, and Florida law applies. but Florida law has little or no case, probably to say no case law is an overstatement, but very little case law in the corporate area, and they've announced a policy of looking to Delaware to fill the void in their corporate jurisprudence. So this is an unusual situation because although another state's law does apply, in many, if not most respects, the court will effectively be applying Delaware law. Now, it's certainly not unusual for Delaware courts to hear cases arising from a freeze-out merger involving a non-Delaware company. And in fact, the Court of Chancery previously decided another case arising from a freeze-out merger of a Florida company. That's the Tuckman versus Arizona case. No problems there. And there, we addressed other cases, identified other cases in the briefs where the court has heard breach of fiduciary duty of loyalty cases arising from freeze-out mergers of non-Delaware companies. Now, what the defendants argue and what the trial court focused on on this applicable law issue was that there is one issue where there's not direct overlap with Delaware. Florida has an appraisal statute that's based on the revised Model Business Corporation Act, and within the appraisal statute, there's a statutory provision that identifies when appraisal is the exclusive remedy. Now, we have a similar system here in Delaware, but it's not in the statute. But the significance of that is there were really two components to that argument. It was conceded below, and it is, in fact, in the Florida statute, that if there's a disclosure violation, an omission of a material, omission or misstatement of a material fact in the information, in the proxy statement for the merger, then we're out of that statute. Appraisal is not the exclusive remedy. And if you look at the briefing below, there was extensive argument about the disclosure issues, a lot of reliance on Delaware cases, since there were no Florida cases or were very few Florida cases.
If I can just interrupt for a moment. Before we get too deeply enmeshed in the individual forum nonconvenience factors, I wanted to ask, would you agree that Delaware has either no interest or minimal interest in this controversy?
Absolutely not, Your Honor.
What would be the interest?
Let me explain the situation.
The only involvement of Delaware at all is that a Delaware corporation was set up to be the holding company, and I guess in that sense to effectuate the merger, that might supposedly satisfy the requirement, the due process requirements for personal jurisdiction. But the issue is whether the choice of forum would create overwhelming hardship, if that's the right phrase.
Correct. And well, let me answer it. Yes, it does. And all I can do is recite the facts and. My opinion is that does create a significant interest in Delaware in providing a forum to remedy the wrongs that my clients claim. But that's the funny thing about the applicable law, because it's really, there's no, it's really not an argument that it creates overwhelming hardship. It does sort of drift into a question of how great an interest does Delaware have in the applicable law section, because this is not a case where...
Well, is it your, I thought your position was that even if Delaware had minimal or no interest, it doesn't matter unless overwhelming hardship could be independently shown.
Exactly, Your Honor.
Well, let me just ask you first, does Delaware have anything more than a minimal
interest? It has a big interest.
What is it?
Coast Dental was the entity that my client owns shares in that. It was controlled, 67% of it was controlled by a Nevada Limited Partnership, which we call DFLP, DSD, Family Limited Partnership. When they decided to freeze out the minority shareholders, they came to Delaware and they formed...
But just articulate what the Delaware interest is without giving me the whole recital of the facts.
Delaware law was used to facilitate this transaction. The controlling shareholder came to Delaware, formed an entity, transferred...
Sounds like a jurisdictional argument.
It is a jurisdiction. Well, there's no question that there's personal jurisdiction, but they use Delaware law in connection with the very transaction to facilitate the freeze out of the minority shareholders. So I think Delaware has a real interest in providing a forum to the shareholders who were frozen out.
But that argument would apply, I suppose, even if the law of some other state applied that didn't look to Delaware.
Well,
that is, as long as some Delaware entity is used, Delaware has an interest in adjudicating the rights of the parties, even under some other state's law?
Yes. They came to Delaware and benefited from Delaware law, utilized Delaware law to created an entity, transferred their shares to it, gave management an interest in that entity, and that was the entity that they used to facilitate the transaction.
So, what is the interest of Delaware? Well, I understand that a Delaware entity was used, but how does that create an entity?
If someone's going to come to Delaware and create an entity to facilitate a transaction to freeze out minority shareholders unfairly, I think Delaware does have an interest in providing a forum, a neutral, objective forum, to those shareholders that were frozen out as a result of that transaction.
Even if the law that would apply would not be Delaware law?
Yes, Your Honor.
So I'm going to ask you why Delaware was used, but I'll tell you where my question's going. You could see where Delaware would have an interest if the Delaware law was used in a way, you know, that was harmful to people in a mischievous, Machiavellian type of way. We wouldn't want Delaware law to be used for purposes like that. On the other hand, as I understand this, Delaware law was an intermediate, it was a conduit, but the real problem you're complaining about is going to be decided as a matter of Florida law. Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
So was there some mischief? Was Delaware used in a mischievous way?
We haven't had discovery. All I can tell you is the facts are they can't, you know, the Nevada Limited Partnership that was the controlling shareholder formed a Delaware entity, transferred their shares to it, gave management of the Florida company an interest in the Delaware entity, and that was the entity that's the controlling shareholder. That's the defendant in the case.
But my question is, let's suppose they picked any of the other 49 states. Was there something unique about coming to Delaware that, you know, furthered whatever their purpose was that you contend was improper under Florida law? Or could they have done this in the other 49 states?
And they could have formed a Florida company, and then Delaware really wouldn't have much of an interest in it. But all I can say is our position is they did form a Delaware entity to facilitate in connection with this transaction. It wasn't some pre-existing entity. It was several months before the transaction. To do the transaction, they came here and formed the entity.
If they formed a Florida corporation rather than a Delaware corporation, and all the other facts were the same, would your position be different?
No. There's no overwhelming hardship here, Your Honor. This is not an unusual...
Would you have jurisdiction here under those hypothetical facts?
We probably would not. That is correct.
So in essence, you're saying that if there's enough of a connection to grant you jurisdiction, then there's enough of an interest in Delaware to maintain the litigation here.
Yes, but I don't think the interest of Delaware is really a paramount consideration in a forum nonconvenience analysis.
Well, as I understand your argument, you have jurisdiction in Delaware, you're properly in Delaware, and you ought to be able to stay in Delaware unless they can come up with an overwhelming reason to go somewhere else, so that you're legitimately here and they haven't carried the day in proving that they should be able to go somewhere else.
Exactly, Your Honor. And the only evidence they submitted is the Merck affidavit, which is A59 to A62. There's not a specific allegation in there. I mean, if you go through these factors, access to proof, there's no showing with particularity that there's any documents or evidence that can't be brought to Delaware. I mean, in a case like this, we're talking about a couple boxes of documents. And when you really look at it, it's not going to make any difference for purposes of document production and depositions whether the case is being litigated is in Delaware or Florida. You know, we serve them a document request. They either produce the documents at the company's offices and we look through them and copy them, or they send us a copy. That's the exact same thing's going to happen regardless of which courthouse we're in. The depositions, it's not huge numbers of depositions. It's the directors and the investment banker. They're going to be deposed where they're located, and that's the same. That'll be the same whether it's Florida or Delaware. So this access to proof issue really comes down to, well, at some point some executives are going to have to come to Delaware for the trial if we ever get to that point. And this is a company that operates in many states, not every state in the country, but in many states. So to say that flying up the East Coast for a day for a trial is overwhelming hardship is just not a valid argument. Compulsory process. The defendants haven't even contended they need compulsory process. I mean, the witnesses are the directors, the investment banker. The affidavit didn't claim somebody couldn't be brought to Delaware. Their affidavit said in a vague way, well, you know, the expense of hotels and airfare. I mean, that's not so. The compulsory process factor certainly doesn't weigh in favor of dismissal. And of course, depositions can be compelled, whether in any event.
Tell us why the Court of Chancery didn't see the logic of everything you just told us. Why did they characterize this as the exception to the rule, the special case that goes elsewhere? Why did they get this wrong?
I'm at a total loss, Your Honor. I mean, all I can say is, you know, I didn't do a good enough job in addressing this because it was a tail-end argument and it was addressed, you know, sort of not treated as a serious argument. But let me get to one of the other factors, which is a critical factor, and that's other litigation. This is not a case where there's a lawsuit pending elsewhere, and the court has said very clearly that that's a very heavy factor weighing against a forum nonconvenience motion if there's no case pending elsewhere. And the trial court said, well, this case is at an early stage, so it's not a big deal. You can refile. But that's always the case in a forum nonconvenience motion. If that canceled out the fact that no other case was pending, then the factor would be meaningless. The courts have said, you know, this factor is near controlling factor. And in this case, it really ought to be, because this is a contingent class action in a very modest size case. I mean, there's about 1 million shares in the class. It was not a public company in the sense that it didn't make any public filings. So it's a very small case. So if the court affirms the dismissal for forum nonconvenience, my client's going to have to either discharge me and try to locate another lawyer in Florida to handle a contingent class action, where those are not routine cases. So there's no guarantee that.
You say contingent class action, you mean contingent fee class action?
Yes.
I haven't done any independent research, but as you know, people can certify questions to our court from other states. Do you know what the procedure is in Florida if the Court of Chancery wanted to certify something to the Florida courts for a definitive answer? Is that an option?
I don't know, Your Honor. I'm sorry. But let me say, on this legal question, there were two components to it, and I think the trial court got sidetracked on our backup argument, because if there's a disclosure violation, then this question of whether appraisal is the exclusive remedy goes away. And the disclosure violation issue, it's not, there's no special Florida aspect to it. What we were arguing was in the alternative that if there isn't a disclosure violation, we still win, because our argument was the Florida statute, the exclusivity provision in the Florida statute, wasn't intended to and doesn't by its terms prevent someone from obtaining a remedy against a third party. And that argument was based on the comment to the Revised Model Business Corporation Act. So that's That was the sort of tricky question that was presented, but we don't even need to get to that unless there's a disclosure violation, which is not a special Florida issue. And in any event, Your Honor, interpreting a model act, I mean, I don't think rises to the level of such a serious issue that a plaintiff that's legitimately in Delaware should be cast out to try to file a case somewhere else.
And do you want to save the rest of your time?
I do. Since I saved 5 minutes, I'm going to take, if I could take one more minute. The trial court also identified an other consideration, which was that, you know, it would be better to file a suit in Florida because then the directors could be added to the case. And all I can say is that in no way implies any hardship to the defendants. The defendant's position is there are no meritorious claims against the directors. I mean, we've pursued other cases where we focused on the controlling shareholder very successfully. So that, you know, that may, there may be room to disagree over that litigation strategy, but that's not a reason to cast out a plaintiff who's legitimately in Delaware with legitimate claims. I think I'll save the rest of my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
You have about 4 minutes. Good morning.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Matt Neiderman for the defendants below. Please, if I may just briefly introduce presenting counsel, Veronica Rendon of Arnold & Porter, who will be presenting. She's been admitted pro hoc. Thank you.
Good morning, Ms. Rendon. Welcome to the court.
Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the court, I am Veronica Rendon. I'm from the law firm of Arnold & Porter, and I represent defendants below appellees herein. The dismissal of on the basis of foreign nonconvenience should be affirmed in this case. The Chancery Court, acting within its sound discretion, determined that this is, in fact, one of the rare cases where defendants has demonstrated with particularity that there would be undue hardship if the defendants were forced to go forward in this forum.
Can I interrupt for a second?
Yes.
There are a bunch of cases on forum nonconvenience that all, I thought, in fairly strong language, say, plaintiff's choice of forum should be respected, except in an extreme situation, a rare case, extreme hardship, whatever the choice of words may be in a particular case. What's the extreme hardship about having to apply Florida law?
I think that the Court of Chancery got it exactly right and appropriately considered the Cryomate factors in determining whether or not undue hardship exists. And of course, unless the court is clearly wrong, it should be affirmed. The undue hardship that exists here are exactly, I think, as the Court of Chancery stated. There are novel issues of Florida law, for instance.
Okay, but what I'm trying to say is that if you want to call that undue hardship, then yeah, you've got undue hardship. My question is, what is it about having to apply Florida law that rises to the level of being undue hardship?
I understand your question, Your Honor. The undue hardship that exists in the application of Florida law here is that in the underlying case, in the merger, the defendants complied with Florida statutory law. And they complied with the appraisal-only statute and the merger statute. They also complied with Florida's notice provision about the mailing of the proxy. The questions that have been raised and the issues that have been raised by plaintiff in this case challenge the application of Florida law. And as co-counsel, as plaintiff's counsel has pointed out, there is not Florida case law definitively deciding these issues. For instance, whether or not the appraisal-only statute does in fact apply, or whether you can circumvent that by styling a cause of action as fiduciary duty and circumvent the appraisal-only statute.
But I think Justice Berger's point is, unfortunately, during all of our tenure as judges, we've had to figure out questions of first impression involving a great many of the other states. You know, Missouri law on these multi-million-dollar coverage cases, New York law on all sorts of issues, and we've done it even though there hasn't been a definitive ruling. Mm-hmm. And given our prior cases, why is this such a tough question under Florida law that the Delaware court should say, well, this is the rare case, even though we always decide questions of law in other states, this is the rare case where we're not going to get into Florida law?
And of course, the Chancery Court acknowledged that it often is in a position of having to apply other states' law and decide those types of questions. But what the Chancery Court went on to determine was that this was, in fact, the rare case, and the reason why is that unlike what we're being urged to do by plaintiffs is to apply Delaware principles to answer many of these questions of Florida law. And there is, in fact, general case law that says that Florida will oftentimes look to Delaware law to fill in gaps in its own case law. Here it would not be appropriate to do so, and that's the Greco, Florida case, which specifically says if there's not an analogous Delaware statute to be considered and that has been interpreted by case law, it's inappropriate to be looking at Delaware case law. Rather, you would go out and determine it either based on Florida case law or another more analogous state. Here, there is no question that Delaware does not have the appraisal-only statute that Florida has. It also has a different notice provision for the mailing of proxies than what Florida has. So it is impossible for the court to go back and rely upon the general principles of Delaware corporate law.
But isn't what the Court of Chancery would be called upon to do in this case what federal courts do in diversity all the time? Nothing's decided, and you try to predict what the highest court in the state would say.
Of course, courts can try to do that. I think when the Delaware Chancery Court, considering what the issues were here to be applied, and of course considering the other Cryo-Made factors, which the court did consider, it didn't solely consider the question of Florida law, but I think when you considered the fact that there is, in fact, novel questions of Florida law that are not addressed by Delaware law, and then you combine that with the location of where there's evidence in this case, whether or not there's compulsory process that can be had, as well as the panel was noting earlier, the very limited, if any, interest that Delaware has on the case, you end up weighing and appropriately looking and analyzing all of the Cryo-Made factors to say that this is that rare case where the confluence of all those factors, when considered together, represents hardship to the defendants were they forced to go forward here.
Well, and, you know, we've obviously looked at this pretty carefully, but I'm struck by the conclusion of the Chancery Court opinion that, you know, mentions the other Cryo-Made factors. But when you get to Roman numeral 3, the bottom line, the court says, in particular, the court finds the controversy raises important issues of unsettled Florida law. So it seems when we look at all the Cryo-Made factors, if we pick one, that really led the court to its conclusion. It's this unsettled question of Florida law. Would you agree?
I'm sorry, Your Honor, I didn't mean to interrupt. I believe that was one of the important factors the court looked at, but having lived through oral argument and having been in front of the court and kind of in a first instance understanding what the court's concerns were, I think there was that concern as well as additional concerns. And I think some of the additional concerns related to the court's reading of the complaint. When you read the complaint in this case, what you see is the allegations of wrongdoing relate to parties who are not named in this action and over whom the court has no jurisdiction. So when one reads through the complaint and focuses on the factual allegations, the wrongdoing that is alleged relates to Coast Dental, a non-party over whom the court has no jurisdiction. It relates to the conduct of the special committee that was appointed by Coast Dental and is not a party to this action and over whom the court has no jurisdiction. It looked at the conduct of Capital Link.
So you're saying that none of those people would be subject to process and couldn't be deposed and couldn't present evidence in this litigation if it occurred in Delaware?
I believe that raises a very difficult question about whether they would be subject to process. The only entity that has been named in this case, Intellident, was not the entity that existed at the time. And when these officers and directors were acting in their role, they were acting as the officers and directors of Coast Dental, a non-party to this case.
Mr. Rentland, wouldn't that sounds like it would be a very powerful, indispensable party Rule 19 argument? But is it an argument for dismissal under the doctrine of no forum non-convenience, at least as it's been glossed by the Delaware cases?
I believe it is, Your Honor, because I think all of this relates back to the question of undue hardship. And again, it's when you look at all of these things in combination, The way that the complaint has been alleged is it's alleged as a breach of fiduciary duty cause of action, and yet none of the fiduciaries who are at issue in the case have been named to the case.
And how does that equate to undue hardship?
It raises the question, there are a number of ways it relates to undue hardship. The reason why I believe it was brought as a fiduciary duty claim as compared to another form of complaint where the actual corporate conduct and action was challenged was to supersede the application of the Florida appraisal-only statute. And so, again, you come back to this question of unsettled Florida law and that trying to be determined by a Delaware court when there is no controlling case law for it to look at, and there's an understanding that Delaware principles would not be applicable in this setting because there is no analogous Delaware statute. So you have a court trying to decide whether or not there is an appraisal-only statute without that type of guidance. You have the court doing it and not understanding, and the big issue that was raised below by opposing counsel, though it's minimized in this argument today, is that Florida statute just doesn't apply. And that appraisal only is not its only remedy. And the reason why is because there's this model, there's the Model Act over on which there's a comment, and it was that issue that the court noted raises a novel issue that it felt that it shouldn't be deciding, rather it was appropriate for the Florida courts to decide. If you were to go to counsel's current argument that, well, you don't get to that point because what you have is a non-disclosure case, when you focus on the allegations of non-disclosure, what they're really based on is the timing of the proxy statement. And again, you come back to a Florida statute for which there's not an analogous Delaware statute. And if anything, Delaware case law that would support saying that isn't a non-disclosure because you had a mailing within a statutory time frame.
What about the fact that there is no other litigation? These plaintiffs, or this plaintiff, has decided to bring suit in Delaware. There's nobody sitting in Florida saying, oh, I'm ready to pursue the same litigation. Doesn't that have to weigh heavily in terms of the court's analysis of throwing this case out and in some respects, leaving the plaintiff with nothing?
That was the consideration that the court understood and, of course, is one of the CryroMade factors for it to consider, and it did, in fact, consider that in its discretion, and it determined that that didn't outweigh the other CryroMade factors. And I think the concept that one CryroMade factor should be controlling and outweighs every other CryroMade factor goes against this court's own case law that says CryroMade should be applied in a flexible manner and it's within the sound discretion of the court to determine. And I'd like to just focus quickly, if I can, on the fact that there's an abuse of discretion standard here that clearly applies. And what the case law says about that standard is if the court engaged in a logical and deductive process in evaluating and weighing the CryroMade factors, which I believe it would be very difficult to say the court did not do that in this instance, then it has to be affirmed on appeal unless it can be shown that the court was clearly wrong. In other words, what this court's own case law says that even if a reasonable person could disagree with some of the conclusions that the lower court came to, that's not sufficient to say it abused its discretion. And I think here what we're really hearing are people questioning on a reasonable basis, perhaps, whether or not the court properly weighed it. But I don't think it would be fair to say that it was unsupported by the record or that the court somehow abused its discretion.
The question that's being raised is whether the court applied the correct rule of law, which is a precondition or a predicate for any abuse of discretion analysis. Which leads me to my question. What, in your view, does the concept of undue hardship mean under Delaware law?
I think it's what is defined by analyzing the CryroMade factors, and I think each factor speaks to a different potential for
a form of undue. What does it mean? That it's a threshold that would have to be crossed in order for a case to be taken out of Delaware and sent someplace else. What is it that has to be shown?
The undue hardship would be that I haven't seen it defined in the case law. I guess if I were to define it personally, it would mean that it's inappropriate or the level of hardship or the onerous burden that is placed upon the defendant to go forward in the forum and to go forward in Delaware is so onerous it becomes undue overwhelming.
Let's build on that. And I'm reading from the Vice Chancellor's opinion, and what I'd like you to do is complete the sentence. I'm going to start it in the middle. He says, the defendants would be subject to overwhelming hardship if required to litigate in Delaware. He concludes that. And my question is, how would you complete that and say, because? So, you know, the defendants would be subject to an overwhelming hardship if they have to litigate in Delaware because.
Because, and let me answer with a number of facts. Because Florida law, they complied with Florida law, Florida statutory law, which is directly at issue in this case. And there is no Delaware precedent that can speak to those Florida issues. And they're being forced into a forum that is declaring itself uncomfortable deciding those issues because they are novel issues, when it would be much more appropriate for the Florida courts to be deciding that. To the extent that it's a question of whether or not statutory timeframes are appropriate, it's not even a question for the Florida courts, but for the Florida legislature to address. And that is the heart of the claim of what was wrong with the proxy statement, is the timing of it, not so much with the content of it. It would be a hardship for them because there is no link to Delaware. As the panel was correctly noting, there is nothing here that makes this an appropriate forum. There is many reasons why Florida is an appropriate forum. It is where all the defendants are located. It's where all the evidence is located. It's where process can occur, and there can be a compulsory process in Florida, but not in Delaware. It forces them to have to come to Delaware to try this case, and that's not a minimal. It's not a minimal consideration. And so I think when you consider all of those things, as well as the last fact that it's an undue hardship, because you cannot get complete relief by definition in this case. And so while there is not currently a competing litigation or a first filed litigation in Florida, there is always the possibility that someone else will file a competing claim in Florida, and it won't be stayed, as counsel was talking about, because this case doesn't have the same parties to it. And I think what was troubling the court when it noted as additional consideration and a special circumstance over and beyond the explicit Cryo-Made factors is that this case is a fiduciary duty case involving Florida fiduciaries, and it hasn't named the Florida fiduciaries. And it is an undue burden to ask the parties that have been named to try to defend that type of case when everything is appropriately in Florida and not in Delaware, and the Florida state law issues that are at issue are novel and can't be decided by Delaware precepts. And I think it's truly when you combine all of those factors together, you have that rare case that the court found in its discretion of when there is undue hardship of going forward in a forum. And I would just like to, again, focus on the fact that there is an abuse of discretion standard that applies in this case. And I think Vice Chancellor Lamb really did give thoughtful consideration, and earlier counsel talked about this just being a throw-in argument. It wasn't. It was briefed extensively. It was one of the main focuses of the oral argument that occurred in this case, and it clearly was questioned by the judge. Vice Chancellor understood clearly and had read all of the relevant precedent. It looked at Taylor. It looked at the other cases that dealt with the question of forum nonconvenience and whether or not it's appropriate, and this is that rare case that rises to it. And in understanding all of that precedent, it ended up determining, balancing all of those Cryo-Made factors.
Well, let me ask you a question. Let's suppose that your position prevails, and then, you know, we're in the next case. And the vice chancellor said, you know, this is an unsettled question of Florida law, my next case, my hypothetical. But I've considered all the factors, and I'm keeping the case here in Delaware. And then we get an appeal. And the argument's going to be, well, that was an abuse of discretion. You know, in the other case, they deferred to Florida and dismissed. It's got to be an abuse of discretion to keep the case when it's an unsettled question of Florida law. How do we grapple with that?
I would, and I believe correctly, and I'm certain that you would come to the same conclusion, say that one Cryo-Made factor and the question of it solely being an open issue of law would not be enough to demonstrate undue hardship. That Cryo-Made dictates that there be a consideration of a number of different factors, and what you have in this case, I think you could call the perfect storm. They're all here. Or many of them in here, and to the extent that they don't exist, they don't weigh in favor of this forum because this forum just does not have an interest in this case. And so it's, I think, inappropriate to focus, and the case law makes this very clear, on just one Cryo-Made factor. Rather, what you have to do is truly do what the lower court did in this case, balance all of them and look at the special circumstances associated with it and determine on a balancing of all of those factors whether or not there's been a showing with particularity of undue hardship. When one reads the precedent of this court, when there's been reversals on forum nonconvenience, what one often sees is that there either has been a misapplication of the standard by the lower court, that the defendant has failed to make a showing with particularity as to whether or not there's a hardship, or that there simply has just been a complete misapplication of a factor. And none of those things have happened here. In other words, there's sometimes a Delaware party claiming undue hardship in going forward in this forum. If that's the instance, that likely wouldn't meet, even if there was an open issue of another sister state's law, enough to say that there's undue hardship. Here there truly is the perfect storm, and I think it's a burden under the plain case law of this court that you have to show under all of those factors undue hardship exists under the special circumstances of that case.
Thank you.
Thank you.
On the question, Your Honor, of the interest in Delaware, I would just refer the court to the Candlewood case where this court said the trial court minimized a significant Delaware interest in the lawsuit, which is to make available to litigants a neutral forum to adjudicate commercial disputes against Delaware entities, even where the dispute involves foreign law and where the parties and conduct are centered in a foreign jurisdiction. So there's the court has already identified a significant Delaware interest. Now, this case, one problem I have is that there just is no way to distinguish this case from the Taylor versus LSI Logic case. I mean, that was a freeze-out merger of a Canadian company. They sued the controlling shareholder in Delaware because it was a Delaware entity. And so the court said, well, the application of Canadian law doesn't create, you know, hardship to the extent of, you know, needing to dismiss the case. So in this case where, you know, the court's already decided Florida freeze-out merger cases. So the issue of Florida law here, and they're really only focusing on one threshold issue, because once you get past that, then it's general fiduciary duty claims. The suggestion is that we haven't sued the Florida fiduciaries. We've sued the controlling shareholder of the company. That's the primary target in a freeze-out merger case. I mean, in Weinberger, the ultimate judgment was against the controlling shareholder, not the directors. Now, we haven't sued the directors, but we use commissions to obtain testimony of individuals throughout the country in every Delaware merger case. So this is not a case of not being able to get testimony or evidence from people. I mean, if you look at all these factors, the other factors besides the applicable law don't even come close. I mean, this is not a case where there's a warehouse of documents that can't be transported to Delaware, or there's any particular evidence. We're talking about a few boxes of documents. And I will say, Your Honor, that this is not a case that we can just refile. I mean, either my firm will be out and my client will be trying to find a Florida lawyer to take a very small freeze-out merger case on a contingent basis, or will be forced to try to find a Florida firm to work with, and given the economic parameters of the case, it may not be able to support multiple firms. So this really is a situation where if this case is dismissed, I think that's why they're fighting so hard, because this may well be the end. And the courts have said, that's why I think the courts have said that the non-pendency of another case is a near controlling factor against the forum non-convenience analysis. Is there any other questions I can answer?
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you both. The court appreciates your argument. We will take this matter under advisement, and we'll also take a brief recess.